From Illinois Soul, this is Dialogue. I'm Kennedy Vincent. Dialogue is an exchange about culture, straight from the soul. You can catch us on Saturday mornings at 11 and Tuesdays at 7 p.m. on Illinois Soul. Africa. Home to the origin of the human race, with reaching mountains, sprawling savannas, lush forests, and rich, diverse ecosystems, it's easy to see where we get the term Mother Earth from. Full of abundant resources from both the land and sea, it doesn't seem like a coincidence that humans evolved from this land. Today, on the west coast of Africa, you can find the geographically smallest country, the Gambia. Cut down the middle by the Gambia River and sitting on the Atlantic Ocean, this country is no outlier to the abundant resources Africa has to offer. Yet, the people who call that land home aren't the ones who benefit from the fishing being done there.
You know, there are some essentialist ecofeminists who are like, you know, women are closer to nature because, you know, the mother of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this mothering role, But then, you know, socialist ecofeminists are like, no, it's deeper than that. That's essentialist, right? Like, we need to think about how, you know, socioeconomic history, you know, political context, like, play into these things, right? Women are usually simultaneously dominated by capitalism, you know, alongside nature, right?
Today, the Dialogue team looks across the ocean to the beaches of the Gambia, where University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign grad student Fatou Job is doing her fieldwork. Her research investigates the environmental and social impacts of large-scale fisheries and fishmeal projects in the Gambia, and how it affects women in particular. Fatou Job has been working with coastal villages in the Gambia since 2019, a couple years after foreign fish factories were built on their shores. Her work has led her to Blue Justice, a global initiative for practitioners addressing transnational organized crime in fisheries. That undermines the sustainable development goals of a nation. I spoke with Fatou, who is currently doing fieldwork in the Gambia, to learn more.
Blue Justice, like, it's an extension of what we would call environmental justice. This idea, which, you know, environmental justice originated, you know, from the U.S. with, you know, exposing unequal exposure to environmental harm. For a long time, it was impacting Black, low-income, brown, basically non-whites, right, who live in, like, areas that industries would go and, like, establish, or either these communities would go and, like, you know, try to find work in this industry. So there's that debate in there. But Blue Justice basically is an extension of environmental justice in terms of focusing on, you know, oceanic development, so like the marine environment and things like that. So for a while, you know, people have been pushing these ideas of what they call blue growth, blue economy, right? This idea that we need to harness the marine environment more to, like, get more out of it in terms of, you know, economic benefits, but also, like, nutritional benefits. So that's where aquaculture comes in, right? Which is the farming of aquatic products. So, like, a lot of the fish that we eat in the U.S., you know, comes from farm-raised.
Yeah.
You know, it's not wild-caught. Wild-caught fish is super expensive in the U.S.
Yes.
Especially, it's really hard to find fresh fish in Champagne. So the UN were, like, trying to push this idea of, they were, like, calling for, you know, blue economy initiatives, blue growth. And then on the other side, also, they were pushing aquaculture, right? We need to, like, harness more out of the resources, but we can do it in a way that, like, we can enclose stuff, we can farm. instead of relying on wild caught fisheries, like this idea of like the scarcity problem, you know, we won't have fish in the future. But if fish is managed well, fish, they, you know, they multiply like, Yes, exactly. So the fast-paced growth of aquaculture, it has been growing, and it's the fastest growing industry right now in the world, what they call the Blue Revolution. So Blue Justice came out of these discourses where activists, scholars were talking about, wait, we're pushing too hard for, you know, this blue revolution or blue economy, blue growth. We need to think about how these initiatives are actually like displacing people, how these initiatives displacing not only people, but like, you know, the marine environment as a whole, right? And it's not just fishing, right? You know, these blue growth projects, it's, you know, offshore drilling, all of these things are part of it. Like the use of like, you know, marine environments to benefit economically from it.
Aquaculture. On the surface, this concept seems environmentally friendly and an efficient way to get fish on many people's tables. Yet, as Fatou mentioned, it's not quite what it seems. When you grow animals in a farm environment, you need to supplement the nutrients that they would normally get in their wild habitats. So, in order to do that, fish meal and fish oil have become the default feed of choice. But you need to make fish meal out of fish, ones not grown in farms, but from the ocean. That's where the Gambia comes in.
Gambia coastline is 80 kilometers long and highly coveted for its diverse fisheries.
When they first dumped the waste there, it changed the water quality right instantly. Everything was completely dead. Crabs, fish, even all the plants surrounding that place are all done. They all died.
And that happened in the beginning days of the factory, before they started running it
before
out of the ocean.
Okay.
Chinese-owned fish meal factory Golden Leader settled out of court in a case where it is facing charges of discharging wastewater into the sea in Gambia. The company was equally accused of withholding information about their waste management and not keeping track of its activities along Gambia's coast.
In addition to foreign-owned fish factories in the Gambia, 90% of large-scale fishing ships are also foreign-owned.
It takes over 9 pounds of fish to produce just 2 pounds of fish meal.
In order to work efficiently, the factory needs 500 tons of fish every day. And only the large trawlers can deliver such quantities, leaving local fishermen with less to catch or to sell to the community. So what even is fish meal? And what does this industrialization look like for the people who live there? Well, I'll let Fatou explain that.
To say the least, I've been working on this for a while now, that to the point that like sometimes I feel like I'm thinking about fish meal. But so basically fish meal is this cereal-based product that is used to feed other fish in aquaculture. And you know, aquaculture is fish farming. And they are all, fish meal is also used in like mega farms, like poultry farms and things like that. But the production process of producing fish meal also produces fish oil, which is also, you know, the supplements that we take as, you know, for omega-3 and things like that. So what's happening in the Gambia is that there are three factories that started production in 2017. And they have been targeting what we call small pelagic fish, which typically is like these smaller, bonier, and like more oily type fish. And in Gambia, I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, the geography of, you know, West Africa, but Gambia is on the coastline of the Atlantic Ocean. And then you have the River Gambia running throughout the whole country. It's a very narrow country. So fish is very important for not just livelihoods, but also for, you know, nutrition and like source of protein. So the fish that they target mainly is bonga, which used to be a really affordable type of fish. However, that has changed because of the large-scale nature that these factories are targeting the fish to produce it into fish meal and fish oil. So the fish has become really expensive, right? So it went from $10 to $50. You can imagine it used to be a really affordable fish, and it's the cheapest source of protein. But now it's not, and it's not cheap anymore because of the overexploitation of these fish species. So the production process is very destructive, right? It's very nasty. Just imagine grinding fish with, you know, machines, extracting the oil, all of these things with, like, you know, using of heavy machinery. Like, it's like the smell just today, like, I just came from Sanyang, which is one of the sites. Like, one of the people's, like, you know, that I was talking to was like, you know, the smell is just, I sometimes feel like I have to actually run away from it. You know what I mean? Like, he was giving me a scenario where one night he was by the beach and he had to go home. It was like 11 p.m., right? And the smell was so invasive that he had to like sprint home to run away from the fish. So apart from that, you know, they also produce a lot of waste effluent, which they discharge directly into the Atlantic Ocean. And there's contention that, you know, whether this waste is treated or not. Mind you, fish meal waste, if it's treated, it could be used as fertilizer, like manure, like in agriculture, right? It could be something valuable, but it needs to be treated, which obviously is costly and requires like special techniques and things like that. So if you don't care about the environment, what do you do? Dump it into the ocean.
Lord, come down and help us out. Send us an angel, help us out. SOS, help us out. Looking all around and watching the world.
People killing, people dying, people lying, people blind. People don't see the sign, watching money all the time. Get the pennies, get the dimes, get the dollars is the mind. State of the human race, people on a paper chase. The environment is fragile, and we've been on the gradual. Declining in a lifetime, or lose the battle. Get burned by volcanoes, get blown by tornadoes. Cause Mother Nature signals, is trying to warn NATO. We got a new terror threat, it's called the weather. More deadlier than chemical and nuclear together. It's hotter in the winter, even hotter in the summer.
Before there was a global need for fish meal, there was a local need for fish. To learn more about the role fish play in the locals' everyday life, I asked Fatou to paint us a picture.
There's a lot of issues related to gender, which I highlight in my work, because in the Gambia, men mainly handle the catching of the fish and things like that, whereas the post-harvest activities are mainly handled by women, from like selling, drying, processing into, you know, smoking it into like a, because smoked fish is something we enjoy a lot here in the Gambia and in many parts of West Africa. So all of these activities are dominated by women. And especially with the smoking of fish, the main species that is used to smoke fish is actually bonga, which is the main fish that the factories target. So the supply chain is being diverted, right, in a way that like women cannot access fish as much as they used to. right? So in terms of like, you know, changing social relations too, whereas in the Gambia, you know, and many parts of Africa, I would say bargaining is like a part of, you know, everyday life. Like people always say, you know, when you go to the market and they tell you first price, you're just going to laugh and tell me, you know, no, I can't do that. And so you bargain, like that's part of it. Right. So whereas now the woman cannot bargain with fishermen anymore because these fishermen, they have contracts. Most of them have contracts with the factories. So they prioritize supplying the factories first. Right. So if they don't have leftovers, they are not going to sell to the woman. So women are having a hard time accessing fish, which means also that, you know, consumers are having difficulty accessing fish.
With Fatou's work having an emphasis on how women are affected by large-scale fisheries, one of the ways she conducts research is by interviewing local women. Their stories help create a traceable path back to the factories and show the reality of the conditions that they create. So, what is a major way these women are affected? Well, the dumping of waste doesn't stop the pollution at the ocean. Fatou told me the land gets infected too.
When the factories came, they located within like a few like feet from the women garden, two women gardens in Sanyang and another village, which is Gunjur. Both of these groups of women have been complaining about not only how the factories are encroaching on the land that they have been using. And mind you, these women don't actually own the land, but they have use rights, right? Which is a common practice in many parts of the world where you can, you know, you don't really own the land, but your family, for example, have been using it for decades to farm on it. And so you have use rights to it. So because they have use rights to it, like, you know, they feel like they cannot go against these factories when they have land, like encroachment, like land encroachment disputes and things like that. And on top of that, there's also a lot of environmental, like degradation, like ecological damage claims that they are making that the factories are causing them in their undergardens. Like, for example, 2018, 2019, when in Gunjur, like some of the gardeners were complaining that they had consecutive bad yield, which means that, you know, their crops were dying, like on, you know, without explanation, right? And they made claims that actually they think that flies are contracting some form of disease from the factory's waste. Because at that time, the factory did not have a waste pipe. So they were like literally gathering the waste and going out to throw it out in like trucks somewhere else. So they were making these claims and they said that for a whole year, they lost, you know, all of their yields, i.e. income. And then another part in 2021, actually, a woman in Sanyang in the other village were complaining about like the factory water pipe literally runs across their garden. And so basically sometimes the water pipe busts or leaks, and then it will like overwater all their plants, and then all their plants, you know, die or get rotten and all of these things. So there's these like ecological issues. They are making claims, and these are women that do not, Gramsci would call like organic intellectuals, right? You know, so they didn't go to quote unquote like Western education or whatever. You know, they've been farming mostly all their lives. So they have these like kind of close relationship with nature. But that close relationship with nature doesn't mean that they should be subjected to the same exploitation of the way nature is being exploited.
Thank you. why do this work? Like, what inspired you to do all of this and go on this journey so bravely?
It's funny because, I mean, I grew up in the Gambia my whole life. In the Gambia, you know, we have this culture where for the longest time, like, you have to study to be, you know, a doctor, a lawyer, or like an engineer. These are the respectable, like, careers, right? When I came to the U.S., to stay with my mom, to go to college, right? You know, she was trying to push me to do medicine. And I was like, hell no. Like, I mean, when I see blood, I get disgusted by the little, like, the littlest things. Like, I get so disgusted by them. But to please her, I was like, okay, maybe I will do economics. During my junior year, I took my first African history course. And I had this history professor who, you know, we had a very, like, good mentorship relationship. And I became this Pan-African. And I was questioning my whole, like, career choices. I was just like, economics? Like, that's, like, the principles that put, like, Black people into slavery, into colonialism. So I was just like, you know... I was just so confused. Anyway, I knew I wanted to go into grad school, but at that time I was like, I don't know what I want to study yet. And I know I also wanted to do something about studying something about, you know, like Gambia, for example, like something that would be, you know, helpful to not just me, but also like to the Gambians, like exposing Gambia to the world, right? This is like Gambia to the world. This is kind of like a saying, right? In a way that was intellectually, like, you know, enriching. So that's when I decided that instead of going straight into a PhD program, I will do like an interdisciplinary African studies program, because I know I wanted to do something, you know, related to African studies, but like, I didn't know in what disciplines. So I did my master's in African studies. And that's how I came into this work, where the summer before I started the program, I quit my job. And then I went to Gambia right in like July. So in August, I was back in Champaign. But when I was in Gambia, so I have a friend who is actually from Sanyang, which is one of the research sites that I go to. And he invited me to a protest that was happening. And at this time, I was reading about fish meal online, like people were making noise about it. It was mostly a dialogue about, you know, the Chinese are coming here. Look at the environmental issues, you know, that they are causing and stuff like that. And so that was the protest in 2018 in Sanyang, right? So I went with my friend as an ally, of course. That's how I became exposed to the problem. And I basically was, you know, the photographer taking pictures, taking videos and things like that. And it gave me a lot of insights into, you know, the claims that, you know, the movement, the anti-fish meal movement was making. So when I came back for my master's program, like at the time, the research that I was trying to do, I was trying to move away from this idea that, you know, like, for example, let's be honest, a white person can study any part of Africa, right? Or like not even a white person, let's say, you know, a Westerner, like an American can study any parts of like Africa, right? But like an African, if you're doing a PhD and you have to study something on the continent, like you need to focus here. I started thinking about it. I was like, why am I not thinking about this fish meal issue where nobody is studying it, like that I'm aware of, at least in an academic sense, right? There are some NGOs, international organizations, environmental organizations that do reports or stories, but there's no like scholarly work being done in it. So that's basically, in a nutshell, long story short.
Through many daily challenges of the fishmeal factories, Fatou's research continues. Her dedication to go home, to devote herself to highlighting the injustices and exploitation that still occur in the motherland of Africa, has allowed their story to be heard on an international level. Through her partnerships with the Blue Justice Initiative and the UIUC PhD program, they shine a spotlight on how this is affecting communities of men, women, and children. Still, we remember and pay homage to what a thriving community the Gambia used to be way before foreign corporations came to their shores. As Fatou would say, Gambia to the world.
I would say I'm very grateful for my journey. You know, I've gone through, you know, like many people in this world, like all of us, right? We have trials and tribulations and things like that. But I am very proud of, you know, how I'm able to emerge out of it and be alive and, you know, be healthy. But I also know and recognize that, you know, I also come from a very privileged, you know, place in terms of, I'm not your quintessential, like, international student, because technically I'm not an international student, right? Because I was born in the U.S., so I'm an American, or quote-unquote African-American. So I feel like the work that I'm able to do right now and being able to be in the Gambia right now is a blessing, because a lot of my, you know, colleagues, my comrades, like, they cannot leave Champaign. They are scared because of what's going on, right, with you know, the current government. But I don't even want to go into that. So I recognize that. But also as an African woman, as a Black woman, what this means to me is, you know, just being, you know, how people are always saying that, oh, we're resilient, you know, kind of this like Black woman archetype, you know, trope that they put into us, right? But that resiliency, like, we need to, we're resilient, yes, but that doesn't mean that we need to be plundered further, like, into being resilient, right? It's kind of like this kind of backhanded compliment, oh, so resilient, the African woman, the Black woman, right? But, you know, we're expected to carry so much weight, right? To carry, you know, we carry a lot, you know, the economy, household, you know, a lot of things, and a lot of unpaid work, I must add to that, especially in Africa, you know? So I want to expose this, like, I'm what it means to me is, like, doing what I love, also highlighting, you know, these issues. That's what I can do. Like, I cannot change the world. Like, I can do the little bits that I can do. And that's by working with my community and exposing their problems to an audience that hopefully it will nudge those who can make a change to make that change. But also doing that in a way that I'm not gonna kill myself, with resiliency, right? Like, balance, that's what I say. Like, I need to, that's why I'm enjoying the beaches here while working.
Fatou Diop, you're amazing, and all this incredible work you're doing for your community is so inspiring. Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Yes, thank you so much.
If you want to learn more about what's happening in the Gambia and other communities that are being affected the same way around the world, you can visit bluejustice.org. For Dialogue, I'm Kennedy Vincent.